ago. We'll call the meeting to order. We have a agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Sure.
Is there any discussions, additions, or subtractions to that agenda? Being none, do we have to vote on that agenda? A motion to approve? Or we just go?
Whatever you want. You ought to vote.
You're in charge.
Okay. If nobody has any problem, we'll go with the agenda we have. We have two people that have requested an opportunity to make public comment. The first individual that I have is Kevin Ashland. Okay. About 3 minutes.
Okay.
And Gary is
too. Okay, Gary's too? Okay, we'll put Gary back here.
Well, I'm Kevin Austin from the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. I'm the regional coordinator. I work with chapters primarily in their fundraising and youth activities and habitat projects also. I'm here to just point out a few things that is a concern of ours in our chapters. And one is that the participation in the Small Grants Program, Conservation Partners Program, is affordable. Make participation so that it isn't onerous on the chapter to be involved in it. Right now, there's another program, a Partners Match program, that is, I believe, basically a dollar-for-dollar match, and we're finding that that's a little bit too much for the chapters. Well, it's quite a bit too much. So I hope it's considerably less than that. Also, the paperwork involved, all our chapters are volunteers. The simpler, the better. I hope the form can be a one- or two-page form. I hope it's also on the standpoint of review of these proposals that it can be streamlined as much as possible. To have chapters come down to the cities every 2 months, every month, is very tough. And I just hope that you'll streamline the process as much as you can. And then lastly, administrative overhead, if you please build that into these grants and your considerations, because it is going to take time to administer them, find out the different contractors involved. So basically anything that goes with the project, I hope that you keep in mind that they don't administer themselves. So that's my input from the Deer Hunters Association. We're very excited about the program that you're going to be working on, and we're getting many chapters that are expressing an interest in it. So that's my testimony.
Thank you.
Can we ask a question?
Sure.
Kevin, who do you think should have approved these projects? Who would be the likely candidate to approve these projects on a local area? We can't go out and look at all these things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How are we going to sift through these?
Well, you know, there can be a couple of ways. I think what you would probably want, well, it depends if you're looking at a small independent sportsman club versus if you're looking at, say, a chapter of our organization. Someone in my role could look at work as kind of a, I don't know what the word would be, but as an assistance to those chapters and helping create their proposals, looking at them and saying, you know, this is where the council is and what type of projects they're looking at, habitat-focused versus I'm sure you're going to get some requests that aren't habitat-based. So, you know, you want to have that kind of, I think, in the document, too. What are you looking for in these proposals? What are you trying to achieve out there on the landscape? As far as first step in the approval process, I don't know if that would be going through some kind of a pre-filter, if you will, of someone on an organizational basis or a regional basis. I don't know how you'd look at that. For our organization, we'll probably be coming through our office, taking a look at the proposals and working with those chapters and assisting them.
So all your projects would come through your state office?
That would be up, you know, that would be from our standpoint as far as administering them, reviewing them, the paperwork, monitoring them, following up with them. We have 67 chapters in the state. It would probably be easier from our standpoint to have someone, you know, really assigned to that task. But there again, it would be what you, the council, feels. If you want 67 different projects to take a look at independently, I guess that's up to you if you want them to come independently to you. But
okay, how about on the other side? How about accountability? How are we going to know these projects got done, they got done correctly, the bills were paid, everybody walked away happy?
There again, if it would be coming through our office and someone assigned to that and monitoring them, you know, we have our accountant up there. We have our bookkeeping and our administrative in a central location. So I think that could be facilitated. But there again, it would be dedicating our time, man hours, resources of our organization that we don't have to this type of administrative purpose right now. So it'll be a new position.
But you see our position. I mean, now we've got the whole state. I mean, you have no suggestion, though, as who we might use on either end. There's nobody that's convenient.
You mean another entity such?
Or somebody who your groups could work with that would be easy and convenient, like the things you originally mentioned there.
At this point, I wouldn't know what entity that would be.
Okay.
Mark, Wayne?
Kevin, do you have any problem if you had, like, the Soil and Water Conservation Districts were the ones that were managing the money and did the oversight and everything, and all you'd have to do is go right to them and then request the funds just like anybody else would?
That would be a possibility. I think all our chapters have a good relationship with the Soil and Water Conservation Districts. They're pretty much in tune with what the needs are out there. That may be a possibility.
I'm just looking at a way so that you wouldn't have to get involved in the administrative.
Yeah.
If every organization had to run their own administrative operations, it'd be very expensive and I think timely for them.
That may be an option.
Bill?
It's just a question, more like a comment for Jim. Audit-wise, I think we're covered, aren't we, under their Outdoor Heritage Plan? I think we have a requirement to have everything audited, so I think that would overall take care of all the problems if there was any. Is that what you asked earlier?
Well, it was, I'm thinking each one of these, there's going to be an awful lot of them, and I mean, the auditor, they basically just a sample, don't they?
I suppose there would be, but...
I know as an organization, we have an audit process internally for our own, you know, fundraising, how those funds are spent. That's quite detailed on an annual basis, but on this type of process, that would probably mean more scrutiny, so it would be extra expensive, though.
Can I just ask an example of what a Deer Hunter Association from Thief River Falls would bring to the table? What kind of a program would they bring to us?
We've been discussing different projects in the Red River type valley work, primarily in, we'll be looking in type, tributary type work, corridor type work, river corridors.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
Riparian type projects, proximity to our chapters, plantings of trees, areas that would allow for cover for deer, also winter cover. We're willing to work with other groups. As far as up in that part of the area, Thief River Falls, we don't have too much partnership with Pheasants Forever or others because, you know, that type of game species isn't up there. Now, in the southern part of the state, then riparian acres and tributaries, working along the river valleys, that's an area of particular concern of ours, especially in the riparian acres, where you have the trees in those different areas. Like you said, the soil and water districts working where we can work on these buffer-type programs. That would be an area. We've been looking at also at hardwood oak savanna-type restorations, plantings of trees. That's a big project, especially oaks and hardwoods. We're going up planting trees and putting up guards around these trees also to keep animals from girdling them in the wintertime. It's a big a problem with any type of tree planting. So things of that nature, tying in the community at the local project level with our Four Corns and kids going out and do projects also. So a lot of in-kind work would be happening at the chapter level too.
Any other questions for Kevin?
So, Mr. Chair, just so Kevin, it'd be mostly restoration and enhancement work.
Exactly.
Not much, if any, protection. Right.
We do acquisition work also. We typically partner with larger groups that have, like, biologists full-time and then work with them in helping fill out their project requests on acquisitions.
Thank you. The next public comment we have is Brad Nyland.
Can I just do it for me?
Sure.
All right. I'm Brad Nyland. I'm the executive.
Can you get his audio from there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We can get all your audio.
I'm Brad Nyland. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Waterfowl Association. And I just wanted to say just real quick that obviously we have 26 chapters on the state. Our chapters are extremely interested in this grant element, the program that's going to be happening here. I would say that every chapter that I've talked to that we've discussed, they've got projects in mind ready to go. Maybe not quite ready to go, but they're waiting to see what's going to happen to be able to maximize their dollar. And something that we've kicked around more internally than anything is much like what Kevin said in terms of being affordable. You know, there's several grants out there with different matches. We'd like to see something in the neighborhood of a 10-to-1 match, 10 on the chapter level. Give you an idea there. So we're very excited about this.
Thank you. Any questions for
What Brad? Kind of projects would you be proposing?
It would be anything from wetland restoration to potentially acquisition, depending on what it might be. Mainly, it would be probably add-ons to WMAs along those lines. Wetland restoration, there probably could be some related to upland that goes with that. Control structures, perhaps.
Can I ask a question on the... on the acquisition side of it, I mean, we haven't figured out what we're going to do, Scott, in terms of how much money or what the cap would be and so forth, but these would be relatively, I would guess, modest amounts, and I don't know. So I don't know how much you could achieve with a $50,000 or $100,000.
Well, it depends on other partners. I mean, how much you can,
leverage.
Generate, yeah.
Any other questions for Brad? We have one more individual that's going to give us a little bit of public comment. That would be Gary.
Good. I suppose I could go over here. I'm Gary Leaf, the executive director of Sportsman for Change. I was just going to kind of give a quick couple of points on the background and just some ideas we had run across. We had done about 30,000, I suppose, got input from around 30,000 sportsmen last year on this grants program, but the Grant Conservation Partners was part of Senate File 6 as far as actually the constitutional language. There was a number of versions of this that were carried in the Senate and in the House. It is unquestionably had the strongest level of public support of anything that we had on the outdoor heritage side. It was probably equal with the council itself. It was obviously part of the council. And that was also another big part of it was across the state. It's the best tool we have to accomplish one of your objectives, which is geographic dispersion, throughout the state because you can take it anywhere. Also, too, I think it would tend to be things would be done more on a collaborative basis at the local level rather than on a species basis. In the meetings we've had subsequent to the passage of the amendment, I think that those interested in this component of it would work locally with their other conservation actors that they have in their area. I think it should, just as a general, I won't get into too much on the online stuff, but 10-to-1 seemed to be a pretty favorable number that we had, run across or been listening to in the last couple of years. We promoted it at pretty much all the outfitters, Gander Mountain, Cabela's, through all the banquets. There's 500 banquets in Minnesota, something like that. It really would accomplish a way to get people involved. We promoted a game fair, Pheasant Fest, all the sportsman shows. So we probably got, word out on it, and then during the campaign, I suppose, to probably a couple hundred thousand people, something like that. We felt in looking at it, there probably should be a minimum, something maybe in the $5,000 range. We also think that probably there was a couple versions last year that went through the House and Senate that were in around $400,000 to $500,000 as a maximum cap. You might want to put a quota on those. And the reason is if you look pretty quickly, you can't really accomplish too much. You start doing an 80-acre acquisition. I did a table of 3, 4, and 5,000. You're at $400,000 for an 80-acre acquisition. 60 acres is where wildlife experts typically start to say that you're actually creating a predator sink, if you will. It's good for pheasants above 60 acres, or 60 feet, excuse me. And you need it much larger than that if you're managing it for ducks. So we've heard a lot of groups interested. Small groups want to raise money, partner, and so on and so forth to do acquisitions at a minimal level. But on the restorations too, we developed some ranges. Grasslands seem to be about $300-$400 an acre. Wetland restorations are around $1,200-$1,300 an acre. So you can get up to $300,000-$400,000 on an 80-acre project pretty quickly, anywhere in anywhere in Minnesota. So that's pretty much
good.
Gary, this program's up and running full force. How much do you think we can actually put out there in the landscape every year? I mean, what number would you like us to fund this out once it's rolling?
Well, we had actually even looked at a number. Right now, the versions that went through the House and the Senate, you know, there had even been talk up to $25 million just designated for this component. But you'd have to prime the pump to get it to there. You'd have to create some awareness. It'd have to be a simplistic system that people could understand. I think you can move almost all of the administration of this online as far as the tracking and so on, online forms, just a basic customer relationship management type project from start to completion and so on. I think you could do a number of the larger ones, but I think you'd do a lot of the ones, the $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 projects, something like that. Maybe somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 million. Maybe less, a little less than that to get it off the ground. I think it's going to take a little longer for this to get off the ground, but I think it'll unquestionably over time will be the most popular tool in your toolbox, and it'll be created by the LaSard Council.
Yeah, just a quick question. What are your general thoughts on the business of accountability? I mean, that to me is going to be the thing we've really got to struggle with. That's going to be the toughest issue I think we've got to deal with. Whereas where we, I think everybody here, we're committed to really making it as simple as we possibly can. I think that's critical. But on the other side, we got some unfriendly legislators, I think, who are going to look at anything that looks like there's not adequate accountability. Sorry. And we got to solve that problem so we don't get railroaded. And just general thoughts.
I think number one is you have to decentralize. If you're moving to web applications, if you're doing online forms, you can have a secure system that allows varying levels of security. Security would be to the grantee or the person requesting it, also to the LaSard Outdoor Heritage Council, any outside or government agency. So I mean, you'd have to have, I think, different levels of looking at this whole process. So if one component of this or aspect of this doesn't catch it, I think another will. I think that it also needs to be communicated to the grantees that they're responsible not just for their grant but the whole thing, so that we have to create a sense of responsibility with it too. But I think the more it's decentralized, the better chance you have of catching it all the way through the different levels. More online you make it, you have a better chance of catching it.
Gary, is there any group that you would favor to have administer this? Do you think we'd be better off with a new group or a current state agency? Or is there anybody out there that you might recommend? Or?
I think that you might consider looking at some new approaches to doing it. I mean, some of the agencies seem to be doing that, but then again, you carry the baggage of their past performance in other areas, which a lot of people seem to be sketchy about. I mean, one thought that I had is if you had a sub-board of the committee that was a board that just dealt with not just reviewing the grants, but the overall issues to make this streamlined, if you had some wildlife professionals, people who are used to dealing with this, I think this is something that's going to be developed over time as far as, especially, I think it should be designed almost from the administration, from that end first. Usually these things are designed the other way around, but I think that's going to be important. So I consider you've got some time to make final decisions on this. I'd bring in some of the agencies and maybe bring in some other organizations or whatever it is to maybe give a presentation on how they might look at the administration of it.
Gary, I was just going to ask you, this program could be where we just invest, $5,000-$10,000 scattered around the state without necessarily any rhyme or reason to it from a statewide perspective strategically. Individually, the projects make sense, but they may not necessarily be part of a broader, bigger strategy. Do you have a sense that there would be an expectation or an understanding if the council were to choose one project over another because one was add merit to an existing broader strategy, or not? Does that make sense?
I think you might have to have some criteria. I mean, the criteria, I think that the criteria probably, if you, the main one that would resonate, at least on the hunter-angler demographic, which is quite large and probably want to get involved in this, that it's either work on existing land that's open to hunting and fishing, and or that it, if it's an acquisition, is going to be open to hunting and fishing, that type of thing. I think also if you're going to be, you know, targeting, let's say, $5 million to start or whatever the number is to prime the pump on it, if you will, CRP doesn't necessarily have a strategic plan. You put the dollars out there, right, and incentives do the work for you. This will generate tremendous word of mouth, not just in goodwill, if it's done well and they do a good job on it. And I think that it'll go a long way to promote the objectives of the Outdoor Heritage Fund and the Lessard Council. I think maybe I answered it.
Yep. Good.
Any more questions for Gary? Thank you.
Thank you. Just one thing from here. Some of those towns have CPA firms. I know we had one of them, if I remember correctly, when we did a deer hunting project. I don't remember, I have to go back on it. Excuse me, on a fishing project up there in the LCMR funding years ago. If my memory serves me correctly, one of the local CPA firms got together, either they bought it or something, and that they kind of pro bono did something at a firm. This is just coming back. But every one of those towns have got people that are pretty smart that want to help out. Now, just a thought. There might be a way they could present a package as part of it. That's what we did, but I don't remember. I remember it a long time ago. My memory is not good.
The next item, we have Greg Knopf, if I said that right.
Yep.
I have multiple questions for Greg, but... And I think these are going to be questions that everybody has. And, you know, I've been grinding this small grants program to every person that will listen to me chew it. And lots of questions have come up. And what I'm looking for today is for you to basically tell us who is that, like, by statute or whatever rules we're bound by, who can actually administer this program, okay?
Okay.
And then I'll have a couple of examples when you're done if I haven't got my...
Sure, if you wouldn't mind, I've got an outline here that I put together on Friday I thought would be helpful. It helped me in thinking about this and what I was going to present. I brought some copies along, so if you want to pass them around. I think that the important thing to start while the outline's coming around, the idea, as I understand it, in a conservation partners program is these are going to be groups, are going to be grants that instead of having people come before the council and being part of the law, that they would be, there'd be some entity that would give out the grants so that they don't have to hire lobbyists, they don't have to make all the trips to St. Paul. And so the dollar amount that you put at the upper end is going to be key, because, you know, what you want to do is probably beyond a certain dollar amount, you want to make them come in and get a special appropriation for that project. And so these would be the smaller amounts for the people who can't commit. I mean, the original one that Senator Lessard worked on back in the 90s was, I think, $20,000. That may be probably too small of an amount. But $400,000 may be a bit high. I don't know. I mean, you know, when you're talking about how high. I just wanted to start out by saying that kind of getting the lay of the land here as far as what this program, at least what was originally thought about when Senator Lessard and I and Joe Dugan were talking about this. What was kind of envisioned. It was kind of more of the local kind of for local clubs and that sort of thing. But why don't I go through my outline, and then if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. First of all, who administers? You know, LOHC is you really can't directly administer it. I did put it's a very short article of the Constitution in there, where it says the powers of government shall be divided into three distinct legislative, executive, and judicial. No person or persons belonging to or constituting one of these departments shall exercise any of the powers properly belonging to either of the others, except and this is expressly provided in the Constitution. So you're in the legislative branch, you have legislative members, you can't be giving out administrative grants. You can make recommendations to the legislature for grants and that sort of thing, but you can't be appropriating the money and then making decisions later. You could make recommendations to another group. that's what I've got number two here, recommendations. I mean, that is something you could do. But, again, all this stuff takes time. You know, it's just the amount of time to review all those grant applications. One of the reasons that we talked about a conservation partners program was to have something that didn't take a lot of time to prepare for the grant. So that's what. So I've got that as kind of a underneath the LOHC. And then the other options you have are state agency. You know, possible agencies. You've got DNR, Bowser, Department of Administration, other. I think the Bowser, you know, actually talked about earlier, Wayne mentioned the possibility of using soil and water conservation districts. I mean, Bowser does provide the oversight. A lot of our state programs go through that way. They're used to giving out cost share grants to farmers, as a lot of you know. Usually that's about a 75% rate to farmers. A farmer puts up a 25% rate. So those are the types of entities that could also do this sort of thing. Some issues, though, that are related to that are, you know, first of all, you get a trust in the community. You know, which of these agencies or which of these entities would have trust in the community that you're trying to work with? Understanding the types of grant requests. You know, if you're providing some kind of deer pheasant habitat, does the person who's working with the local, is that part of their knowledge base for those types of grant requests? And the capacity to oversee and verify grant requests, I think, is real important. Then there's also the non-governmental organization, or NGOs. You've got, you know, possible types, foundations or conservation organizations that you could use for something like this. But there are issues, again, you've got trust in the community, understanding the types of grants, capacity, or so some of the same items, but then you also have control over the organization and conflicts of interest. And the farther this thing gets stretched from the state, how much control and how much ability do we have to make sure they're doing the right, proper job over in administering the grants? So those are some issues. And I did add a fourth one here. It's a little more complicated, but it's a nonprofit organization established in law. We do have some examples of nonprofit organizations that have been established in law that part of their responsibility is to work with people in the local community with money, like the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute is one. The Minnesota Conservation Corps is now a nonprofit. These have been established in the Star Lake Board, which was just established last session. They're nonprofit organizations. They're not state agencies, but they are established in law, and the state does have some direct control over them. In fact, AOR gets direct appropriation, so does the MCC. Star Lake Board, they're just beginning. They got a small amount last year from a grant through Bowser. But then there are some issues. They're complex organizational structures that can have a higher cost of implementation if you're setting up a whole new structure to do this sort of thing. And you should have a legislative process to enact. I mean, you can set these things up in advance without the legislation, but if state money is going to be going to one of these entities and they're going to be making decisions, it's best, I think, if the state has some control over that.
Bob? Greg, on the cost side of things, is it your judgment that the whatever cost, so if we went to an outside enterprise or even if we gave it to Bowser or DNR or something like that, they have a cost associated with administration, those costs would come out of the tax receipts to the fund, correct?
Mr. Chair, Bob, that's correct.
Yeah.
Is that going to be within the 1% cap?
Well,
you know, I think we could probably, I mean, I think we can ask for whatever we want.
I'm just asking.
Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, but the 1% is does right now. The statute only says it applies to DNR. So, what, you know, how this is? I think the important thing is that for the council to submit some kind of a budget as to what the necessary needs are to administer this. Whether it comes out of the 1%, it'll be whatever gets appropriated to administer these things.
If I recall one of our meetings we had, I asked one of the directors from Bowser if there'd be an additional cost for oversight, and he said no. He thought that this would just fall into what the rest of the things that they do.
They could administer without a separate administration fee.
That's what he said during when we were at the LCRB.
I don't regret saying that.
No, he's probably going to have
it. It goes that way, well.
I think because they do a lot of those things, there probably would be minimal oversight.
Mr. Chairman Wayne, I think you're right. I think that there would be some. I'm not sure who said that. Generally how we do they do the RIM reserve units, and the state does give them, about $1.5 million a year that goes out to the soil and water conservation districts for part of that. I mean, because they gather in individuals that are interested in getting involved in programs. They also do the checking and making sure that things are done properly and that the easement aren't easement violations. So they do get money every year for that purpose to the Soil and Water Conservation Districts through Bowser. I would think that there would be some money involved. In fact, other issues to consider, too, I did want to make sure that we've already talked about the process to verify that the work has been done and the types of conservation improvements funded and control over future changes of the conservation improvement. Because one of the issues that comes up is when these conservation improvements are put into place, who's going to make sure, how are we going to make sure that somebody doesn't come and tear them up down the road, somebody else buys the land? I remember back in the 80s when some of the insurance companies were heavily involved in agriculture and we had a lot of conservation, a lot of cost share money, and the state was paying 75% of the cost of these conservation improvements. Well, one of those large eastern insurance companies acquired a lot of farmland in the state through forfeiture, and they just tore up all the conservation improvements that the state had paid for. And people were really upset about that. I mean, that's something that you don't want to have happen, is down the road that there aren't protections in place for those conservation improvements. And I think that's going to be a real key in setting up a program like this to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Well, we had already sort of established as a guideline that enhancement and restoration work would only be done on property that's permanently protected anyhow. So that would prevent that example that you're saying, which we clearly don't want from happening if there's permanent protection there.
I agree. You know, Dave asked the question, and I'm not sure I got that I understood the answer yet. If we say we're going to fund $4 million in a small grants program, and of that $4 million, we're going to knock out $300,000 for administration, okay, to whoever might do it. Does that $300,000 count under our 1%?
Not the way the current statute reads, because okay. It reads for DNR. It's basically for DNR administration or to help with administration of the council.
Okay.
And so I wouldn't see that as, I would see that as some of the cost of getting those conservation opportunities in place.
Well, my next question is, and I know you actually put the statute on there about the three different branches of government and we can't tell what we can and can't do, but if we had a staff, if the DNR was the official grant administrator, okay, mm-hmm. but we had a staff member of the council, and we obviously have gone through some personnel and job descriptions, and we're going to end up with some staff at some point. If one of those staff members was a council employee and he took the applications, screened the applications, prioritized the applications, and then forwarded them on to the DNR, who is the grant administrator. Mm-hmm. And they then wrote the checks after that. I mean, basically, here's what we've got, here's what we've acquired, here's what we like, okay? We recommend that you do that. And then the DNR gets that, cuts the checks to those groups. Does that in any way break this separation that we're required to maintain?
It depends on how it's structured. I'm sorry, but if the commissioner had, or the DNR had no choice, if it was, you're basically determining, you're providing an administrative function of who's getting the grants. If they go to the commissioner as recommendations, and the commissioner generally would follow those recommendations, and if they're couched in that they're recommendations, I think you're fine.
We're good there?
But yeah. That would probably fall within our 1%, our staff person doing that. Because being appropriated somewhere else. That's our own internal expense. I'm not saying it's wrong, bad. It's just that would, if you use Bowser, you're sending the money somewhere else. If you're funding it yourself with your own staff, it's going to, the same cost would fall within the 1%.
So I want to give you a scenario and see if we're in the loop. Let's say we gave Bowser $4 million, $5 million, and they then ran a sign-up. Let's say we wanted during this biennium, say we're dealing with wetland restorations. Let everybody across the state apply. They then go to the local their county boards, soil and water boards, and they then make the recommendations. Apparently there's a regional or state group here that would take and could review them and determine and prioritize them. And when they're done prioritizing them, give them to us and say, this is the order in which we recommend them, because they all have these technical, they have something that's unique to them. And then they wrote the checks. Now, they then could fall within that administrative. We wouldn't be subject to that 1%.
Yeah, the 1% is it's a little strange, because it does say DNR for administration of the council. And so the question is when, you know, that's going to all have to be changed. I assume you're going to have to make a recommendation to change that, especially if this bill passes that has the money coming directly to the LCC for your administrative costs. You know, I told the committee of the Senate a couple weeks ago that I hope people don't get too hung up on the 1%, because I really think that this council needs to do is put forward a budget, you know, and try to be as reasonable as possible in the budget. But if it, you know, we're going to have to revisit that whole 99% and 1% provision to make sure that it works properly. You know, that was kind of thrown together at the end. The Senate had 97%, and which would have allowed 3%. When the Senate passed the bill, so it there are some distinctions as to how it, you know, I think that the way the bill passed, there were some people who thought the DNR could do it fairly cheap, and I'm not sure that that's, especially now that the council made a decision to not be independent from DNR, those same assumptions may not apply. I think it's something to think about how you might handle that.
Mr. Chair, Greg, just a couple things. I agree that we need to have a budget. One of the critical components of that budget will be, do we administer a program that makes recommendations to fill in the blank agency or not? Because that'll have a staffing component if we did. And that's a consideration. And, of course, it's a little of the chicken or the egg thing. If, as soon as we can establish that we will, in fact, hire a staff, one of their first responsibilities will to be create a budget based on the recommendations of the council as to how we want to manage this particular program, which is has the capacity to be as has the likelihood as being resource intensive as the rest of the amount of funds that we're going to spend. And the other thing, Greg, you may have said it, but I didn't quite hear it yet, but I think the consideration for us is access to expertise. I think would it be important consideration. Whatever organization manages this, I think will be helpful to know that they know what they're talking about. If someone comes in and says, you know, we want to plant coffee food plots. They'll have an idea that that's probably not a good idea.
I know that soil and water conservation districts get very involved in habitat issues, but their main purpose has been, you know, protection of the soil from eroding into the waters of the state, and that's been the main function.
And that's really my question. I'm generally familiar with soil and water, but I'm not sure what the breadth of their expertise is. And for certain projects, I think they'd probably be great. But in other cases, they might not have the competence to really make prioritization.
Right.
Well, and you know, this is a little off the subject, but I would think maybe not the first year, but we're going to want this program to have the same strategic goals that we have overall, so that this is just an extension of what we're doing elsewhere. Because otherwise, you got a patchwork of 20 acres preserved in the middle of a cornfield, which isn't really what you want to do. You want something that's really going to have consistency and overall impact.
It has to have a biology approval from somebody, in my estimation. You know, one of the things I was thinking about, if there was a small grant that was submitted, it would need one of three things. It would either need a sign-off from the local area DNR wildlife manager, a sign-off from an area fisheries manager, or a SWCD biologist or somebody that knows. And you couldn't even submit an application until you had an approval from someone in your area that, you know, has the knowledge to do that. Now, you know, as the council, I think their middle name pretty much is under the gun, because everything we do is pretty much under the gun this first year around. When we make a recommendation and we say when we make our recommendations on April 1st, we're going to put $4 million in the small grants program, and if there's a $300,000 administrative component to that, what else do we need? Do we need to have the funding priorities identified? Do we have to have all of the decisions about that small grants program made, or can we say, because we don't get any money until July or August, that would give us, you know, several more months. Can we just say in our recommendation, we're going to give them $4 million, the grants are going to be approximately this size, give, in that recommendation, give the overview, and then take several more months to determine the specifics.
No, that's what you can't do. You can make recommendations to whatever entity is going to be involved in this. You could make recommendations, and you could provide some oversight over the agency, but you can't direct where it's going to go or put in criteria that have to be applied. You can basically make recommendations. If you get beyond that, then you're kind of
But whatever recommendations we come up with have to be done in our recommendation to the legislature. It can't be done after the fact.
Well, not for the legislature. I mean, you could review what it, like, let's just say that Bowser was going to be giving this and it was going to go through SWCDs or whatever. You could review how they're working on the program and make give them advice, you know, as they're developing the program, you know, after the legislature had gone home. You could do some of that, but you can't direct them, and you can't direct how it's going to happen. You could offer advice and that sort of thing.
So basically, we decide who's going to administer our small grants program, give them our wish list of how we'd like them to do it, recommendations per se, and then they're going to go about, I mean, administering that, not necessarily exactly to our wishes. I mean, you're saying we make recommendations, but they can kind of do what they want.
Unless we create it in the pots. Program.
Yeah, like pots of money. This month, there's $1 million for wetland restoration, $1 million from grassland.
And you can put any criteria that you want, and you can recommend as part of the law any criteria that you want that they have to follow. And that's how the legislature does this sort of thing, is they put criteria in the law that need to be followed.
Yeah.
Well, that was kind of what my question was. Could we, I mean, determine how much of those specifics had to be done by April 1st?
Well, it depends on how much control you want over it. It really depends on the level of control. I mean, you, the specifics, whatever level of control, those are the specifics you should have in there.
Okay. I mean, we better decide pretty specifically what we want to do, or someone else is going to decide for us. Yeah. So I think just the cap, the match, the type of projects that can be funded, all ought to be stuff that we have pretty well lined out.
You may want to start out with it a little slower this year, in this first year, just because you don't have the time.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just to be clear in my own mind here, I don't think the council has the capacity to determine by April 1st that we recommend $20,000 to the East Black Duck hook and bullet crowd.
I agree.
You know, I don't think we'll have that degree of specificity. And I don't think anyone expects us to. I think we can, however, though, make a decision by April 1st that says we recommend a model for administration and an amount of money that may or may not include recommendations by the council at a date to be determined later as to how those dollars. For example, we could say we recommend $4 million to the Department of Natural Resources to conduct and manage this program, and to consider recommendations of the council on the specifics of how the money may be used, again, on a recommendation basis, so that they can choose to do it as they want to or not. And I'll just make this one other point. I don't know if we talked about it, but another option, of course, for down the road is for us, the council, to make their own specific recommendations to the legislature, so that the legislature writes in law $20,000 to the East Black Duck Hook and Bullet Club.
If I could offer just a little bit of advice on that, you know, recommendations sometimes have a lot more weight than people give credit. And you know, when things are set up, I mean, if you're making recommendations down the road for an entity that's putting this together, yeah, I don't know exactly what kind of process you're going to have for your overall program, whether you're going to have people who put money under this. I mean, LCCMR has a, you know, every 6 months they have a work program and all that. I don't know if you're going to be going through all of that type of a process. But the other thing you can do is make them come back, you know, as part of getting the money, is have them come back to explain how the program is going to work, and you give them your advice at that point about maybe they're kind of on the wrong down the wrong road. I think most entities would be more than willing to take your advice on those things because they're going to be back next year.
Yeah, I would think we want to establish the criteria that's critical, like permanent property, mm-hmm. you know, size, minimum and maximum grant size and matching and those kinds of things, and then do as you're saying. As you say, if they're interested in the program, they're going to want it more than 1 year, and if they don't do it right, guess what?
I think that's very important because that'll cut down on 500 applications that have no chance of being funded. If they know up front, I mean, this is what's going to score you the most points. Item 2 scores you the next most points. And if your highest priority is 5th on the list, your funding is unlikely.
The nice thing about using one of these pre-existing organizations like DNR or Bowser, they've already got all these practices specified exactly what has to go into them. So we don't have to do any of that oversight to saying how many pounds of this has to be in your grass. And so that, to me, I mean, that's where we've got to stay away from that stuff. I think is what we're talking about is getting the pots of money together, specify where the pots of money go, leave it up to one of these entities to decide how it gets done and use the specifications.
And you know
what?
We'll end up doing some things that aren't perfect the first year, and then we'll come back and collectively figure out how to make it easier the second year or more effective.
And Mr. Chairman, the other thing you could do is you could have a couple. You could have DNR and Bowser. You could have wetlands being done by one and some other type of a habitat be done by another one, by another entity. It's not, you're not limited on just creating one entity to do this if you don't want to.
One more question. The state organizations now, forestry, they have a state forestry matching grant fund, I think it is. Isn't it through DNR? They've got a state fund that's available.
Yeah, it's been decreasing quite a bit. You're talking about to do the stewardship plans or whatever?
Yeah. That, and then they have some money available to assist with some forestry for plantings and things like that.
Yeah.
Okay, and does wildlife have the same money for wetland restorations, and does fisheries have the same money for fisheries, for spawning reclamation areas? Or
not on private lands.
Does anybody have any more questions? Greg?
I have one statement. I served on the IRRRB, you know, for 26 years, and I served on the LCMR. I don't hear it. And reference to the perfect, there's no such thing as a perfect plan. And there will be mistakes made. Be aware of this. We had on the IRRRB some things that would solve accidentally. And there, you do have people out there, I think you probably know, would like to see this to fail. But there was all of these some mistakes made. I hope not, but we had them on the IRRRB, I can tell you what we did. So there's no such thing as a perfect tip. The second thing is, if you really want to do it right, I haven't had the luxury all the years I was chair of the Environment After Resource Committee, less than 20 some years before that, almost 20 years, listening to Greg. So if you really want to solve it, I got to be a little bit facetious, I'll tell you what you do. Because he was a wealth of information. Open up a criteria, double his salary, and bring him over here in your trouble.
Yeah. You tell him he doesn't have to come in on Sunday. Thank you for coming in.
I'm used to it.
But not from us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have so much a question as much as I have a comment about having state entities administer this. We've got to be careful with this, folks. This DNR, the soil and water. People are going to be watching. We don't want that fear of supplant here. So let's just move in cautious when we talk about having a certain entity doing the, you know, having their kind of input and having them review it and give it their stamp of approval, I think is a great idea. And I think you came up with that right away. But just,
Mr. Chairman and Senator, one of the reasons I put in that fourth option is, you know, something that you may want to think about long range. I mean, you could even set up like regional types of entities that are that basically receive money and work in that region of the state. Again, it could be more of an infrastructure than you want to get involved in, but whatever. But there could be the opportunity to do something like that through setting up, establishing nonprofit organizations that are set up in the law.
What about using the regional community foundations? Any reason not to do that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the issue there would be is that whether or not they have the they understand the types of projects that are going in place. Sure. And that was kind of getting at that whole issue of whether or not they have a good foundation understanding.
But if we use somebody like that, and you already had a biologist, see the plan, see how it's going to be implemented, and sign off on it, okay? Then the person that's just cutting the checks, I mean, you'd already have your oversight from a biology standpoint.
I mean, I see this, and maybe I'm crazy, but I think there are going to be seven criteria. I don't know. And there's going to be a ranking from 1 to 5 on each of those criteria and a score system that gives you maybe 35 points. And if you could get, as part of that, some sort of a sign-off by someone who can certify that the project makes sense from a biologic standpoint, then the administration of it, which is really to take all the applications in and to send the money out and to ensure that the projects actually get done, while I think you have to have someone who has a clue about what a wetland looks like, there certainly are plenty of community foundations with staff that would be able to manage it on that level and actually give a little local control, which wouldn't be a bad thing either.
Score sheets, for instance, you know, they've got NRCS, although they're a federal agency, they've got score sheets to use for their EQIP program. Pots of money come in, they score them up to determine which ones is the highest priority, and that's how they fund them. So yeah. I think there's things out there we just need to get a hold of that probably is going to make our life real easy.
And the other thing I think we've got to do is require geographic diversity with this. I mean, we don't want everything to go to one area. We want to make sure that the whole state gets a crack at this.
Yeah. I agree. Bob?
I was just going to say, one thing that I think about, though, is the need to have that statewide strategic vision, that view. You said before, David, you know, that we're going to have, for all of the money that we're going to have, we're going to hopefully have a statewide strategic plan, and this will have to be consistent with that plan.
Yeah.
And so there is a risk that if we divide the money up into multiple organizations on a regional basis that we may compromise a little of that if we're not careful.
Yeah, well, I think we have to be careful, but I think it's fairly easy to do because we're going to end up using some classifications of ecological zones and I think end up with a goal that we want to accomplish within each ecological zone, and then it's fairly simple to say, does it fit?
Yeah, right.
You know, if the goal is to establish aspen forests and someone wants to plant curly willow, it don't work.
Yeah.
How do we work this grants program into private ownership of land who wants to do something for a wetland? You'd almost have to do an easement on the property for the benefit of hunting and fishing.
So really,
unless somebody's willing to do that, we're only talking state, federal lands anyway. Well,
or acquisitions or additions to those lands.
But you could do a private easement that doesn't have hunting that still improves the habitat for all the surrounding property.
That's my question is, when you have something adjacent to, it was suggested for state parks. Somebody said, how about if you have a state park and then you go buy some land adjacent to it? It benefits the area, but if it's not open to hunting, is it excluded from
No, we went through that already. Because the requirement in the Constitution is acquisition has to be, unless prevented by law, has to be open to hunting and fishing. But
not
easements don't.
Okay.
Yeah. And I guess from my point of view, I mean, it all depends on how many projects you get. I mean, if you've got 25 projects and they're all acquisitions, you know, piece segments adding on to certain properties that have that, then it's going to those projects compete against an easement with no access. Now, if all of a sudden we don't have any of those options in that area, I mean, then that project might move up the list.
That's where you'd come up with a scoring system, and adjacency would be one of the scores.
Yeah. To me, it kind of comes down to when you run out of willing sellers. If there are no willing sellers, then you're going to have to go to option B, which might be an access with no easement.
Right.
But
yeah.
it would score lower based on that.
Yeah, I think of it on an all things being equal basis. All things being equal, except one has access and the other doesn't, then the one with access gets a higher score.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any more questions for Greg? I'm sorry, Bill.
Just a clarification. On the fourth option, those entities would have to have organizing enabling statutes in place, or we would have to build those in our recommendations?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Bill, a couple of different ways you could do that. I mean, you could start working that during the interim and trying to set up these things as nonprofits. But I think for the state money to go into these organizations, it would be best if there was some legislative background on them. All of the ones that I mentioned all have statutes, so the legislature has some control over the entities. Some of them, the boards are set up in law. Some of them, they're not. The MCC is not set up in law. But there are various options. It would give you a lot of different options in setting that up. Again, it gets a little complex in how in doing all of that, but it does give you a lot of flexibility.
I would guess that that's a future year, not a current year discussion.
I think I agree with David on that.
Just
it's a good option.
It may be a great option, but I doubt that it's a good option in the next 2.5 months.
Mr. Chair, David, the Star Lake Board was just set up last year. I think they started drafting that in January. And it now exists, so it can happen.
Yeah, it can, but it's there might be a less complex way for us to go in year one.
Well, thank you for coming here to hang around in case we have another question for you a little later.
Sure, I want to follow what you're doing, too. So.
Next item on our agenda is to review the grant program language. Bill, do you want to tell us what we need to know there?
At the last meeting, when we heard from the... In your packet is an item that's in memo form. And at the last meeting, you requested that we provide you with the LCCMR language. And this memo does that. In the first page, it shows the 2005 first special session language for LCMR. I chose that particular language because it had some of the specificity that we'll presumably talk about later on in it. For example, it talks about private organizations for enhancement, restoration, and research on line 4. The other thing that I wanted to point out in the LCCMR language is that the way it is structured, on line 6, you'll see a reference to subdivision 16, and that references the language starting on the bottom of page 1 and going on to page 2, which are the payment conditions, which is something you may want to think about as you go through this, how you draft that. I then wrote up 3 examples that roughly parallel the information you received from Greg on how an agency how this language might look. The first example on page 2 is an agency-operated grant program example. And in that particular, I'm going to go through this in somewhat detail so you get an idea of what's going on here. In that particular case, the first line appropriates the money to the Commissioner of Administration to provide competitive and matching grants and puts a limit in. And then it defines who is eligible. So that's where you get your eligibility. And it defines what the projects are for with the phrase starting with for enhancement, restoration, or protection of forest, wetlands, and wildlife habitat in Minnesota. On the next sentence, it describes the match level, then the conditions of the match, then in the line that's with the phrase that starts says must include level of match, amount of habitat restored, and supporting degree of collaboration, urgency, and public access for hunting and fishing. That's where you would put criteria. The program must be open for application year-round, and grants must be evaluated and granted at least every 3 months. That's where you define the process and guide the recipient with those kinds of guidelines. Subdivision, whatever, of this section applies to grants. That's the payment conditions. And then we talked a little bit about accountability. We talked a little bit about work programs and things like that. In this particular example, I simply wrote in a feature that the recipient would file a grant accomplishment report and held back 15% of the grant until that was in and approved. So that's this is one example of how you might do this through an agency. B, the major difference there is that it's through a non-governmental organization to a non-governmental organization through an agency to operate the program. And the third example I provided was directly to a non-governmental organization. I might add that it would be unusual for the legislature to appropriate directly to a non-state entity. They rely on the state entities for fiscal oversight, but I'm not sure it's impossible.
I want to say I think year one we're wise to use a state agency and not break any new ground. It just seems to me that we're asking for trouble trying to create something new in this first year before we have our strategic plan. Use the Bowser DNR to get it done. They know how to do it. They're trusted by the legislature more than someone outside would be.
When I asked Dennis Simon at the meeting last time, and that on their enhancement, the state enhancement program, they're currently running $500,000 through there, and I asked him if we had substantially increased that funding on state property, how much they could handle. He indicated they got about $1 million a year. He figured that's about what it would be. I guess this question to you, Bill, is if the DNR ended up being the grant administrator for a $4 or $5 million small grants program, if we provided the dollars for admin, could they step up and acquire the personnel it takes to do that if they had the money to do that in a timely fashion? Because they've indicated to us that their current level is pretty maxed.
Right.
And I understand that they can't handle another $5 million on top of it without some resources to do that, but if we provided the resources to administer it, could they put the people in place in the next few months to do it?
They have the resources to get those people on board. A few months, I'm not so sure. It might take 3 months to get somebody hired, something like that. But they could
plug them into a process that exists.
Oh, yeah. There is, in fact, an operation in the financial part of DNR that is specifically for grants management. And that when the legislature sends us a grant we didn't ask for, that's where it goes. When we have a new grant program, that's where it goes. I just wanted to say, in conclusion about this, I thought it would be good for you all to have some idea of what you're shooting at, what you're aiming at in terms of a law to affect your thoughts and desires about how this grant program operates.
Well, thank you.
This is very helpful.
The next issues are basically the discretion of the grants program.
Before we go there, one of the huge differences between the LCCMR example and what Bill just went through of agency operated is the LCCMR is a reimbursement program where I'm not sure that the agency operated is completely a reimbursement. Is that right, Bill?
It was designed to be a reimbursement program.
Okay.
And generally the case is reimbursement unless otherwise specified.
Because we're going to deal with a number of groups that don't have a big pot of money that they can spend and then look to get it back if they need to hire a bulldozer to put in a fish structure, and it costs them $30,000 to build that structure. I can imagine some of the groups are really going to struggle to come up with that money to pay the bill.
And I would say that the vast majority of them that are going to be applying in this segment would not have the ability to do that.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. That may be an issue, and I don't know if Bill, you're talking about, because generally the state, you can't spend state money unless the state receives the product first. That is a statute 16A. I don't know the statute off the top of my head, but
0.41.
All right. Had to do with a lot, but there is that issue of what. Generally, the reason LCCMR does reimbursement is because they make sure that they get the product first. And because that is the general state law, you may have to exempt something like this from that state law, and that may be a controversial issue to do that.
That's why I brought it up, is to make sure we were clear on it.
I might add also that the Department of Finance rules are that you can manage grants on an accrual accounting basis. I have an awful time with that word. An accrual accounting basis. So when you have perfected the liability to the point that it's in your books as an accounts payable, you are able to
ask for reimbursement at that point.
I have never seen it done on a bulldozer, but I have seen it done on million-dollar land purchases. And the way those work is when presented with a letter, option exercise letter, or a signed valid purchase agreement, the money is wired to the purchasing entity with enough time for a failure on the first wire to not get through, so you can wire it twice, but with so little time that the amount of time the money is in the local unit or the buying entity's treasury is very short.
Mr. Chair, I think the key thing on this is to make clear what our capacity is, what we're able to do, and let people understand what the and from an expectation standpoint. So if it's protection activity, they know what they can expect in terms of timeliness and how they need to come forward with materials. If it's reimbursement or not, they know in advance of what they're getting into. And just be clear with people. And I think, frankly, part of what we'll face is, in some respects, this is a screening tool. You know, organizations that come to us and say, you know, we can't pay you back for a year is a clue for us, and maybe is something to take note of, and maybe allows us to do a level of screening or self-selection that saves us some time.
And there may be ultimately a need for Pheasants Forever to create a grant or a loan program to loan the chapter money to do the project and then get paid back by the
and they have small one of those, and it's very well entrenched.
Yep. But there may be a need for multiple
bigger
types of
that.
Those things to make it work. But again, we'll be dealing with organizations that have the capacity to do that, which is a screening tool. We won't get the folks that really have no accounting system whatsoever and no ability to be sure. We can't be sure that the work will get done, because ultimately it's not like you and I going out and giving a check to someone. It's the state of Minnesota, and there's a little higher level of accountability,
but you know,
less risk-taking.
What I'm wondering, is there any possibility that these groups will have enough credibility within the community to let the local banker say,
sure,
hey, we'll take care of this, because we know there's money coming at the end. I mean, it's not like it's going to be a high-risk sort of thing.
Well, and in that case, you know, an organization would come forward, and part of their application would say, we've got a $250,000 line of credit to do this activity and demonstrate that to us.
But I'm just wondering if it's realistic to expect that communities in general do that.
Right. The banks love to loan money when they're sure they're going to get paid back.
Right. The state's usually pretty good.
And yet, if you're going to have a small conservation group come to the table and they got a $100,000 project and they're going to try to scrape up the 10 grand it takes to get that 10-to-1 match, and they borrowed $100,000 for 18 months and it cost them an extra $6,000, that may be the difference between them doing it or not doing it. I mean, what I'd like to try to do is, I think that we have some items where this small partners subcommittee might already have some commonality or have come to a consensus on. Okay, I don't think we're going to be able to decide all the things about the small grants program tonight, but what I'd like to do, and I realize that our decisions are just recommendations to the full council, okay? But what I'd like to try to do is get out of here tonight with a few things that we all agree on, so that when we meet with them, we can kind of say, kind of here's where we're at, decide what we can't agree on, so that we know what to talk about the next meeting that we have. So what I did is I put together, and you guys, this is just my thoughts, okay? You can take a look at what I put together, and we can kind of walk through those and see on the issues that I've kind of come up with my ideas on, and see what amount of consensus the group has. Okay, And I can tell you that I'm that the small groups, the small grants programs, I'm really excited about it. I think it's where I come from. It's the people that I work with that are, you know, that it's the groups that I am most well associated with. Okay, so I have real high enthusiasm for this project, you know, and so I've talked to just every single person that, like I said, would listen to me talk to them about that. I came down to a grants program that's $5,125,000. Does that size of grant, does that fall within your projected? What would it be if you were...
So tell me how many that is if we're gonna put aside $5 million. Can somebody give me I'm just not figuring out how much that is.
Is there $5,000 grants?
So we average. So if we come up with an average, how many of these projects are we talking about that we have to try and administer? Maybe it's not that big a deal.
If they're 50 grand a piece, it'd be 100 of them.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, so you'd screen 300 applications, approve 100. And you'd fund $150,000. Now, if you had $100,000 grants, now you're obviously down to 40 or 50.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, if it was a 50 average, you'd be looking at about 100. Does that grant size, does that kind of fit with you guys?
Well, the only thing I say, Scott, is you pretty much rule out acquisition here because you're not going to buy a lot for $125,000.
And I agree, and I think that the acquisitions go to the other pot of money. Right. If you want to go buy an 80 for a quarter or half $1 million, come to the rest of the council with your proposal under the wetlands, prairies, or otherwise. This is designed to deal with the little guy, not the groups that have $400,000 to go make an acquisition.
Point. Who was it that talked about acquisition? Gary. Maybe it was Gary. Acquisition about 80 acres. How many dollars was that on an average?
4,000, he figured.
4,000 an acre?
Yeah.
Well, it's 3 grand. So.
Yep. Yeah. And those, to me, those projects would come into our regular funding scenario. I mean, they're big. They would need more partners, probably.
But the other side of that is, and it's your second point, what's the match? I mean, there are plenty of acquisition projects that could get done if the last $125,000 was there, because someone does have $300,000 in the bank, and it's not a 10-to-1 match, it's a
3-to-1
type of match.
My initial thought, Dave, was to graduate it, to say it's a 10-to-1 match up to $75,000 and then something less than that, bigger. But what you're going to do is you're just going to have everybody come in $1 under
the
threshold.
The system,
and
it, right?
So it doesn't work, you know.
Right. You know, I want to just... And I love the idea of match. I'm uncomfortable with the 10-to-1, and it's a philosophical thing for me because I think what we really want to do in the long term is encourage a culture of investing in the habitat in the local communities. And 10-to-1, especially if you can use in-kind, really doesn't give much in the way of incentive to get out there and really come up with real money and build a culture to do that. You know, $100,000 project on a 10-to-1 means you got to come up with $10,000 and you're going to value your volunteer time at $25 an hour. It doesn't take long to get there, and you really haven't made someone sweat over it.
Well, the only thing I would say to that, Dave, though, is, you know, you were talking earlier, you want significant projects, you don't want 20 acres here. I mean, you're going to start to limit yourself. If you look at a lot of these chapters, they might have $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 total a year to spend. And it might not all just be going to, a project like this. If you want to do significant projects, I think the sweat's there. I mean, you're just going to have to make it economically feasible so they can do it and make it be... a significant enough a project that it's not just a showpiece for everybody to drive by and say, look what we did. So, I mean, I think you're hamstringing yourself when you start thinking like that.
Could we also, in our scoring, say if you have a 30% match, that when we score your project, it goes up on the scoring criteria? That would be a way for them to try to get maximum amount of local dollars. Wayne?
I was going to say, we could use 10% financial, up to another 10% of in-kind services, so that at least then there's your sweat equity.
Yeah, I mean,
people out there physically on the ground doing something.
It's not that I want to disadvantage anybody, but I really believe we have an opportunity to get local people used to raising money to support habitat projects, which will, if we do it right in the long term, we'll build that after 25 years. It keeps going. I don't know how to do it exactly, but I don't want to make it so easy that we don't end up having created a culture to support this kind of stuff at a level higher than we have today.
I would say, Mr. Chair, I think that your first question, I think the 5 to 20, 125 is reasonable. We'll come back some other day, maybe, and probably decide to refine that. But for a starting point, I think that's reasonable. I think maybe it was Darby or somebody said that 10 to 1 on a ranked basis would be considered. It doesn't have to be 10 to 1, but we would give a higher score to the 3 to 1 or the 2 to 1. But I think for starting, 10 to 1 is a good idea. And as long as people understand that there's a higher ranking for those that are at 3 to 1 or 2 to 1, then that may get a little bit further down the road to David's point of building that expectation.
Again, I want to go to this upside. Let's just take $125,000. You're coming from the grassland communities. $300 an acre for restoration of grassland. That's a number that's, I think, readily agreed upon. Yep. You can't. What can you do here? 100 acres, $300,000. I mean, you've limited yourself to doing anything but just really showcase projects here that really don't have a lot of value.
What keeps those people from applying further up our stream, though?
Nothing.
You know, I can tell you that when I see this project, I go out there and I say, here's a wildlife management area, and it's 120 acres, and it's got some crooked boundaries in it. So some little outfit comes up and says, you know, we can buy 17 acres, and we can square this off. You know, we can catch the rest of this wetland here. You know, it's going to cost $50,000 to do that. And we can come up with $5,000, you know, they'll throw in the other 50, we got this deal done. You know, and my thought process is far different than yours, Dave, in the fact that if you take a little sporting group that's just barely been existing, and they go do a project, that project builds enthusiasm for that organization. And all of a sudden, when they go banging on doors trying to raise money, people want to be associated with a winner. So they do a project. And then the next one is easier for them. And the third one is even easier. And so they start receiving more and more funds and doing bigger and bigger work instead of saying, well, we're not going to work hard because we can get a 10-to-1 match. We're just not going to, you know, kind of get lazy about it. I see those groups being successful and then growing, not, and I see that from a different perspective.
I see this as an opportunity, too, for us to start managing our wildlife management areas a little better. I know there's a number of organizations out there said we would help them put the food plots in, we'll help them plant the trees, we'll do all these things, but it's all going to state land in the first place, and so all we're doing is actually building their equity into state property. So 10%. If I'm an organization, this is a $10,000 project to plant trees, and I come up with $1,000, I would think that we would be very happy to see that happen on state land.
And also, Mr. Chair, you're going to get some legislative buy-in with this stuff, with these smaller programs you're talking about statewide. You're going to get more legislators, and there's going to be a bunch, and we already know this is happening. There's going to be a bunch out there. They're going to say, you know, you're not going to get out here. We're never going to, these little programs, this thing's a scam. The more little projects that you can get, the more buy-in you're going to get from legislators, I think.
And we can change it. I mean, we can try it, and a year later it can be different.
That's,
I mean,
a nice,
it can
part
evolve. I'm just trying to generate the most amount of enthusiasm, and I think you do that with lots of projects that are smaller that have a really good match to them. You know? Gary, you have a question?
Yeah, I was just going to. We did get a lot of input by a lot of professionals, and we looked at a large project, multi-million-dollar habitat complex that had all the partners in it, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, local sportsmen's club, and all of that just a couple of weeks ago. And the matching contributions by all those organizations was 5%. And this was a multi-year, multi-phase, The other thing is that why you need to keep the match low, simplistic, and I think you need a higher dollar amount because of the extra burdens on administration that you're going to have. This isn't a private sector organization. If you have to use the reimbursement model, that's going to exclude a lot of these people right out of the gate. So the extra problems you have because it might be government complexities that aren't calculated into this, I think, is why you need a low matching amount.
And I think that on the larger projects, I think if they can raise $40,000 to do a $400,000 project, which it is only 40, 60 acre project and restoration, you know, to get the program going, in out years you could start modifying matches, formulas, and dollar amounts. But the key thing is to prime the pump on this. Otherwise, the conservation partners won't go any further than here, and the people won't be able to get engaged.
Gary, can I just ask you what your reaction to, I forget who said, if it was Wayne or somebody, 10% match is where it starts, but that there could be a float, you know, if you can come in with 20 or 30, that would raise your
score.
Priority,
your
score. Or how is that?
Well, the originally,
is that going to cost problem?
Yeah, this program was never matching grants. It was a number of us that pushed the idea of matching grants to get some local engagement. When you take a look at their abilities, I think I would do that in out years. I would make it as simple as possible to get as much word of mouth out there as you could. I think that 10 cents on the dollar, and then in a year or two, start modifying it. Maybe you might have to make it more tiered or make some more scientific manipulations of it in the out years, but on the formulas and so on and so forth. But, you know, with the state of the economy and banks, and they have to plan for their other activities. Remember, that's all set up for their fundraising activities for a lot of them. You know, I wouldn't do it that way. I would make it straight 10 cents on the dollar and get it going and see what other complexities are going to be mandated on this program.
Let's see what's that.
I want to say something. I worked on this a long time, right from day one. Greg knows. If you're going to do a complexity, make it complex, you got Orem, Minnesota, wants to do a trout stream, and they have to compete with Brainerd, which has the money. You might as well forget the Ors and the, all the little towns. If you're going to do a matching thing, one company against another, you might have just wiped them off.
Good place to start.
Take Northern Minnesota, forget it. Having said that, I think there is some merit. An in-kind service is to go back. We thought of in-kind, but how do you value that? Gary and I talked about that too, and others. How do you put that in the matrix? That even shouldn't count. It just should be. Otherwise, and I understand to get at that question of in-kind services, maybe that shouldn't count very much. I don't know how to articulate that very well. But I do know it's going to be a formula where somebody could raise more money for another. They got two eco projects or something like that. You really have put. And that wouldn't play well, I don't think. But that's just my feelings on it, so I just wouldn't.
Well, Scott, the situation where, go through a couple of projects, I'm thinking in my mind. First thing, we went out and planted on a WMA, planted about 1,000 trees, pots. Didn't cost us $5,000, but it sure would have been nice to get some reimbursement for that. So $5,000 might be kind of big, because that's a pretty nice thing when you go out there and put all those trees and all the sweat equity, like you said, people going out and doing that kind of a project, and under a $5,000 minimum, they wouldn't be able to get anything. But still, it'd be a huge project. And I kind of think that maybe we'd be a little bit better off if we didn't maybe worry about the minimum so much.
Just put it zero to 125.
Just put it zero, so that way it does allow every small. And then the other thing is, when we're talking about the match, in community, one of the last projects we did, we had a guy with a cat came in and actually did all the cat work for us, didn't bill us. See, that's that in-kind that I'm talking about. He just wanted to do it because he wanted to be part of the project. Now, that all that work was probably worth $2,500. That should count towards this as being part of that match, even though there was no money exchanged.
Now, you could use contract in-kind services volunteer labor services. Or even if we wanted to, I mean, if we ultimately, when you get down to the infinite details, if you included volunteer labor, you could set the rate at which that would be counted at. But if we make a tentative at 10 to 1, a tentative, and a range of 0 to 125, a tentative, you know, we've thrown around $4 or $5 million. Okay, that's the figure pretty much everybody's kind of come up with. You know, I'm thinking $4 million would more than cover the projects we could get this year, but we should make that recommendation to say, you know, our recommendation is to fund the small grants program with $4 million with the ability to go to our emerging issues fund, because we're going to set aside some money, and I'm assuming that there's been some talk about putting $5 or $6 million or $7 million in an emerging issues fund, that if the small grants program had great projects and ran out of money, that we would at least have the opportunity to go to the small grants or the emerging issues fund to see if there was more money for that. And so started at 4 or 5, hopefully we can go through all of that. If it needs more, one, it can either wait till the next year to get some more, or if it really goes well, we might be able to go to the emerging issues fund to get that. But does $4 million,
I think that makes sense.
Is that we had a kind of consensus on $4 million? It's number four on my list, we're just not going to be able
to. I got to run at 6:30.
Okay.
One of the things not on your list is the issue of we're only doing projects where there's permanent protection already in place or in place,
and
which is part of our overall criteria, but I don't see it here, and I want to make sure we don't miss that.
I'll put it down. I think the whole council is already on that.
They are. I just wanted to make sure we didn't.
You bet. Number four, we're probably not going to be able to decide tonight. But number five, you know, when Wayne said that if we can maybe go dig up a couple of other in-place DNR scoring priorities, Bowser scoring priorities, and look at those, and maybe we can use one of those as a criteria as a model, you know, that we can change to use for our scoring method. If you split the projects into prairies, wetlands, forests, and fisheries, we just can't leave fisheries out of it. But one of the things I really don't want to, I would like to try not to do, is say each one of these gets 25%. Because as soon as you do that, we're going to have great wetland projects and some crusty fisheries projects, and then we're going to force that money into an area that doesn't rank as high. Now, we can say we'd like to see 25% go into each of these categories.
But
don't mandate that it be that way.
It's almost more important that there be a requirement for some geographic diversity, and we're going to have to sit down and figure out how we want to divide up the state. But I do not want to be at the end of the year have no projects in the Northeast and everybody up there saying you guys are just leaving us out and it's not fair. And I think we need to have a strategy to ensure there's some money going into every region, however we divide
whatever
it.
Whatever the regional determination is.
I
agree with that.
I think everybody, we have consensus on that, I think. The number eight is just, like, if you said, Scott, you can, of all the things that you think are important, number eight should probably have been number one. Okay, I just wrote my thoughts down one day, and I didn't necessarily get them in the order of what I thought was vitally important. But we need, I'm thinking, and of all the people I've talked to, what I would like to not do is say, okay, here's the money, apply, you're funded, and if you didn't get funded this year, you got to wait a whole year to do that. I would love to see this operate more like a round robin. Where we
on a
get
rolling basis?
Yes, where you apply, you might not get funded this month, but you get funded next month, okay? When the next $400,000 comes in, if we're using $4 or $5 million.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I expect that we will be much smarter. We will be 50% smarter after we've made the first round. And so, not just the council, but also the folks that will apply. And so I agree with you. I mean, we will undoubtedly have folks that will come to us and, you know, they forgot something, didn't include it, and they ran out of time to get it done. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they can't come back to us the next week or the next month.
Mr. Chair, I was thinking that when you were talking about...
Just call me Scott.
Scott.
Okay, thank you.
Scott, you were talking about not categorizing these, but at the same token, everybody, there's people out there that got fisheries issues, wetland issues, and everything else. I'm thinking that it would be nice to put them in their category. You got your first cycle, your sign-up period, the cycle goes through, all your forestry money is gone, and nothing's taken for fisheries. At the end of that first sign-up period, you now switch funds. You move funds back. So you at least start them out on an equal field, but you have a sign-up period. At the end of the sign-up period, they get prioritized, you spend your money, and there's a pot of money over here, now you shift it. But you then, that way everybody can still feel like all these voters are out there. I don't know who's,
at this point in my life, I don't know how many forestry people have got forestry concerns, fisheries concerns, wildlife concerns, and I like to make sure they all get taken care of at least the first year, you know.
Do we have consensus on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. Place a value on flexibility.
Just move it around.
You know, the number nine I kind of already addressed. You know, we got to find some accountability, auditability. You know, if you have a small group, for example, a Pheasants Forever ORD, you have national organizations. When you say send, and we're going to come and audit you, I mean, there's a capability to do that audit. Right. I mean, they've been audited. They're, you know, so I don't have any real issue trying to make sure that a project that gets done by a substantial organization, I don't think there's any trouble auditing that. But if you have the Raleigh Sportsman's Club, I can tell you, I don't think that the three people that are officers probably can't run Microsoft Word or Excel. You know, they couldn't put you a spreadsheet together if they tried. Those people would need to team with an SWCD and say, will you work with us? We need audit capability. Okay, we're going to have to get a sign-off by somebody anyway, Fish, Wildlife, or SWCD on these projects before they come to us. And then if you've got somebody that's little, get your audit capability by tying them to somebody who's auditable. And that solves all your problems, or at least the vast majority of your problems in how are we going to get a report back as to how the money was spent.
Yeah, we might be... Scott.
Thank you.
I don't want to make any more work out of this if we have to, but I worked with townships when we had national disasters, and those people there are probably the ones you talk about that can't run, you know, the auditor, but they're definitely do very well with just handbooks. I mean, if you've got a $125,000 project, I can't imagine you needing that to have all of that electronic abilities. These guys are going to be able to track these.
And it's not my concern. This auditability thing is not paramount concern. I think it's a paramount concern to everybody else.
Yeah.
So when we start sending the money out, how are we going to get it watched if we want to get a bill through and passed? You know, if we added something like that as a recommendation, you know, that might ease some of those concerns. Wayne?
Scott, I think just because you mentioned it here and the accountability and everything else, I would just like to get on to the next part and say, let's use a system that's already in place for starters. Use the Soil and Water District first year, because I tell you what, they already have the system in place. And I don't really have a preference with the DNR, but DNR wildlife managers aren't in every county. They're not as local. They've got their own budget problems right now. Forestry's got the same situation. Use the Soil and Water Districts. They're already located in all the different locations. They've already got the conservation practices. They already have the software. They already have everything in place, I think, to do this. All they have to do is take some forms and change the names on the dock. And that's the one reason I like it. It just seems like common sense to me. If they're willing.
You know, one of the items...
Sorry, Mr. Chair, so we give the money to Bowser for a statewide basis?
Yeah, what I'm looking at is we give the money to Bowser. Bowser then sets us up, prioritizes, or puts them in criteria the way we want. Here's a million. They then let their soil and water districts run their own sign-up period, a 30-day sign-up period, put them together, work with the DNR, their local work group, prioritize them, send it back up the chain. The ones that get top priority gets recommended. Those are the ones that get funded. After 20 days, 30 days, we have one area that doesn't have enough money yet. Let them then have the authority to shift money from one pot of money to another pot of money. And then at least they're accountable. We have a system in place.
Okay, then would you also allow for, a biologist from Fish and Wildlife or wherever to give the okay.
I'm thinking
worry about the breadth of
I'm thinking on a local basis. You already have NRCS, Soil and Water, DNR, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. There's so many people. If they work together as a work group, along with all the other partner groups that are out there, the conservation organizations, I think they can probably put a work group together that can prioritize this thing at for the public's interest as well.
Anybody have any other comments on that?
Mr. Chair, may I address you folks?
Sure.
Chairman Scott. I'm John Schroer, president of the Waterfowl Association, Minnesota Waterfowl Association. I'd like to go back up to the
number one issue up here, item one, if you don't mind. We're smaller than DU, but $125,000 might not be enough for us to do wetlands restorations at the type that we do.
Yeah, John, you know, one of the things we talked about was if you had a need above that amount, doesn't mean it, you could still come to the council for funds that are not...
You're going to bump me up to the next level now?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, and then in that case, then you would be brought together with others, potentially. Yeah.
But do we really want to do that, Bob? I mean, $125,000, I mean, he's put in a lot of...
What would be the number you think we should do? What do you think we should do?
Why not bump it to $300,000, $400,000? How does it hurt us?
You only get 10 projects.
If everyone comes in at $300,000, $400,000, but that's not going to happen. But you made insignificant any kind of move in water almost. I mean, if you got to move a tile line, if you got to construct any kind of a barrier or put in a water, $125,000 isn't going to do anything for us.
Well, I do believe that that there are enough well-established organizations that we would get 10 $400,000 projects. Okay? We'd have our small grants program would then fund four big projects or 10 big projects across the state, and then that would be the number we'd have. I mean, we could maybe do something in between that.
Actually, my thought was $250,000. $250,000 is a pretty good chunk of change, and it still is a nice and even number. We don't it does what he's asking for it to, Jim, is that it may be not $400,000, but maybe that has to go to the next priority, but up to $250,000 is going to give us a better shot at getting them done.
What kind of projects are you talking about?
I would refer to my executive director, Brad Dyler, sitting behind you. He's got a better handle on that than I. But Brad?
Well, I think it could be anything. Yeah, I guess like Jim just mentioned, it could be complete wetland restoration. It could be
water control structure, fish barrier.
Yeah. It could be breaking tile. They make huge impacts financially.
If we chose to raise that to $250,000, could we say our small grants program will fund from zero to $250,000, but we won't fund more than X number of projects at $250,000, so that we could be sure there would be other money for lots of other little projects? I could do that. I could go with that, Jim.
Well, I mean, if that becomes a problem, we can just start jacking the number up. That's what we really want. This is what we really want, Scott, is these types of projects. Yeah. I mean, I would much rather have 500 of these than us, you know, allocating the money around the state. These are the types of projects we want to stimulate. So if it becomes a problem, we'll just jack the number up. If we see that we're getting 500 of these solid $400,000 projects a year...
That's substantial.
That's
substantial and meaningful. Thank you.
And again, they're not all going to come in at that. But again, I mean, you've limited this now. If you're going to start dealing with water to almost nothing, I mean, what are you going to do for $125,000?
But if we're splitting, I mean, we're obviously trying to split these into four categories too, you know, so not all of those dollars are going to be in wetland restoration, you know, but a quarter of it or so. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying it can't...
Terms of raw numbers.
If you put $1 million into wetlands, you get four projects.
Right.
And they're going to have to prioritize the top four projects in the state, and if it doesn't fit here, then it's got to roll over to another project or to our other program.
My motivation is for the little guy, okay? My motivation is not necessarily to 10-to-1 match... You know, substantial organizations that already have pretty serious fundraising capabilities. You know, if Les was here today, he'd say the Coots Unlimited is the group he's after. You know, and I understand that. So, I mean, if we can increase the allocation and change the amount, you know, maybe make it $6 million and then raise the total to $300,000. I mean, would that work?
Scott, I mean. I don't know why we're marrying ourselves to $4 million. I guess that's where I'm at. If we're talking in good times, right, $90 million a year, is that what we're looking at here? $100 million every biennium? Is that right?
Approximately. Every year.
Something
into this.
80 to 90 a year. I think we're really on the low end here, but I know we got to start out cautiously because we don't know what the economy is going to do.
And what and my thought process behind that bill was that I would like to fund the small grants program with the ability to go to the emerging issues fund if need be, and then say, we ran out. It worked so good we ran out. Okay? Versus, you know, funding it big and then having if in theory there was 50% of the money left, people say, oh, you gotta cut that way back because nobody's doing that.
Yeah, I think Scott, the
two comments. One, I think you're right. I think you'd rather run out of money than have too much money. There's something I've seen in the legislature over the years. You put money into a program and it doesn't spend the money. Everybody starts wondering what's going on.
Yeah.
That's one question, one observation. The other one is, the other thing you could do is you could set up a two-tiered grant program. Mm-hmm. You could have one a pot of money for a certain level of grants that's higher, and you could just set aside a certain amount.
Small and really small grants.
Yeah.
Tiny and really small.
Yeah, I mean, you could do like $4 million for under $125,000 and another $4 million for $125,000.
What does that sound? That's a great idea.
Good. It works.
Great. What do we want to put the total at? Are we going to move this from $4 million to $8 million?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I could just mention one thing. On the, I remember from our last meeting the issue about the emerging issues account. One of the discussion points was that that may not be wise or necessary, that because our recommendations are every year, and you know, an emerging issue would be one that is requires some timeliness to it and relative speed, and it's quite conceivable that between the end of any legislative session in May, when our recommendations would go into effect, and when they are next due is January, you know, it's a 7-month window, that anything falling into that time frame might still be managed to the next recommendation.
It's an emerging issue, but it could be funded within a year.
It's conceivable, yeah. So I think I recall that there should be some more discussion around it. So I wouldn't rest on the possibility of a safety valve as an emerging issues kind. I would recommend that we settle on a number for now, have another discussion later about the emerging issues independent of this.
Do we need an actual number? Can we use like 20% of the projected? Just 20% of the projected revenue, because we're all working on revenue.
That's going to be a number, though.
What we think is going to be there anyway.
That will be a number.
You have to have a number. There has to be an appropriation for this program.
Okay. So should we change this to $6 million with $3 million under $125,000 and $3 million from $125,000 to $400,000?
That's as good as any.
Is that work for you, Jim? I mean, that's almost as much money already, you know, for large grants.
Mr. Chair, I was wrong before. I think we're 50% smarter than we were 20 minutes ago.
Scott, the other thing you can do is you could collapse them after a certain time. You know, you can say, because if one program's not doing as well, and you can, you know, for the first 6 months and then after a certain time, all the money becomes available to all the projects. Yeah. So you kind of give a chance for everybody, especially the small ones, to get in before that.
So,
done that before.
In our notes, we're going to obviously turn in some notes that Bill's going to print up for our meeting a week from, or even tomorrow.
7 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Unlikely for tomorrow.
We are at 7.
We'll do. We'll start at $6 million with $3 million for 125 and down, and $3 million for 125 up to 400.
That's good, Jim. How do you feel about that?
I'd feel better about that.
Okay. There's only one other item that I have that's not on your list that I would like to, this is just my idea. I would like to have our small grants program specifically exclude research or anything
Mr.
like
Chair,
that.
Well, on that point, the Constitution doesn't allow for research.
Okay. Yeah,
and Bill was just, I think, my guess is you copied from an LCMR thing and brought it over. So
would you say that quote, learning opportunities or kids outside, none of that qualifies?
Consistent with the Constitution.
Those were the ideas that I brought. Yeah. Does anybody have any others they want to get kind of on the record? And we'll get these printed up. We'll go over them again. We'll continue to try to identify the two or three things that are not done, like who's going to run it. But, Wayne?
One question I have with research. The question was brought to me. When you're going out researching the background for the project, you got a project you got to do, you got to research the soil, past history, planting history, soil type, soil borings, you possibly
fertilizer recommendations, that's all part of research. And so he says, okay, is that out the window?
That's not the research I was talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. So that's not going on counting the number of pheasants before.
Yeah, we're going to go out and throw the hoop out look at the number of butterflies for the next 45 years.
I consider those things part of the overall project.
As do I.
Yeah, basic or an offshoot of basic research would not be permitted. Yeah. I think that's right. Yeah.
Anybody else have any other
that
things
information
that
gathering.
Just got to be cautious. I don't know how we do this either, but when we start talking about those big restoration projects, are we starting to get into some of that clean water money?
Well, it depends on if that's a wetland restoration for habitat purposes.
We do.
Well, you know, that brings up the whole question of what should our relationship be with the water entity? I mean, I think we've got to do it. I don't know when we're going to do it and sit down and how we're going to deal with it, but gosh, there's such incredible overlap.
I think evolving is the term for that relationship.
I think that it's a really important first thing. That is I've got a list of April 2nd issues. I think that's an April 2nd issue.
Yeah,
I do. Is there anything else we want to go over?
Well, I do want to ask this question. I think it feels a little like the gorilla, you know, the 800-pound gorilla in the room here. But I think we've all independently heard concerns about DNR running this program.
Right.
And I think I think we should probably talk just a little bit about that. Right or wrong, my view is that there is a perception that that DNR running this, getting recommendation for whatever $6 million to run this program, might not be well received by the constituencies that we're trying to reach. And I don't know if anyone else has heard that or not. I think folks have. And so I'd like to... I'm thinking about our fellow council members for tomorrow's meeting.
I'm thinking that we should include them in this conversation.
I'd like to figure out what's the best way. Yeah. Okay, so maybe then it's just to defer it till tomorrow.
I think so. Yeah.
Because we're not going to obviously finish that one tonight.
The only thing I'd like to say is I think there's also a lot of those feelings for the
do that tomorrow.
Yeah. Soil and water conservation districts, too.
Is it?
I mean,
legislation.
You know, you get in certain areas and they're very good, and you get in certain areas and they're pretty much owned by Big Ag, and they're going to be a problem.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
Our area is one of them.
Yeah, and that's going to be
first-class
problem in a lot of
parts. And I think between those two things, Jim, I think that's... I think there's an expectation that the council will serve as the honest broker, if you will, or in trying to sort out those things.
And if a private foundation, if there was one that just stuck out, if there was one that we could come together with, you know, I think that would be the best received. You know, and to me, it's kind of my opinion on that's kind of on a year-by-year basis. I actually thought if we could find more than one entity that was good, that was all equal, like you said, all things being equal. Okay, we have a $6 million grants program. What can you administer it for? This group says $400,000. This group says $300,000. All things being equal, we could actually go kind of bid out the administration of our small growth grants program. Maybe not this year, but over time.
Yep.
And just because they did it one year doesn't mean they're not in it for life after that. But I mean, is there any other foundation that sticks out? You say the Magnite Foundation. I don't know what wildlife, or if they have any wildlife background. Yeah.
No.
Nature Conservancy has got a great track record. I have not heard them mentioned, and I don't know. I'm just throwing that out as a very credible name.
Can we get that added to our agenda for tomorrow, Bill, or make sure we get it added, that we at least bring up this one point for 10 minutes sometime tomorrow?
I think that at this point the time to do that is when we go through the agenda tomorrow.
Right.
Okay.
One thing, Scott, this question, where are we at hiring yet? Executive director?
We got to wait till the bill passes.
So we're not doing any groundwork at all on that before that happens? Or?
Well, we've got a position description. Okay. Greg Hubinger and I.
Okay, so we've got that going.
I mean, it's ready to launch if we...
Well, Jim?
I just have one other quick subject. The Waterfall Association has always been closely related with these wood deck house building, and you know, there's other these bluebird house. A number of people have asked me, will they be able to come to this small grants program and get money for these like wood duck building house days, bluebird building house days, so on and so forth, those types of things.
It's enhancing.
What's that?
It's enhancing. It's got a polymer.
I don't know. Is that habitat?
Oh, a wood duck box is habitat because that's what they use, and it's not so there. It's there before. But my point comes down to they're already doing all that.
Yeah.
We're going to then supplant those funds instead of supplementing them. If they say we built 500 wood duck boxes last year, we can build 1,000 this year if you fund this. I mean, then we could say that's habitat. We could do that.
Yeah.
But for us to go in there and just pay for that so that they didn't have to. I mean, at that point in time, we would be supplanting.
We want to pay for additional ones.
Correct.
Exactly.
Yep.
I think that's exactly the way to think about it. So.
But yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, if they wanted to expand the program, that could certainly be funded. One more public comment?
Yeah, just have one question that hasn't quite been addressed tonight, but I think is real crucial for all the partners out there. When we work on projects right now, we're typically working together. And if I have a chapter, a small town with deer hunters, there might be another chapter with Pheasants Forever in that town or in that county. Do the partners come in? Would it be, say you have three different organizations working together as a partnership. Do they come in and say, this project represents an entity where all three of us are represented by this entity, and you're matching with the partner saying, we can come up total with $40,000, so you're matching the entity, or are you matching individual groups within that? I'm wondering, when we bring these to the table, what's your conception?
My response would be that we would fund the entity. I mean, because you could get five people to get together and say, we each want $150,000. You know, all of a sudden you got five entities working on a big project. So we would fund the project, okay, based on, regardless of whether it was one person or five people that were participating in the project. That would be my response.
So someone comes in there representing the group,
correct.
And then that's the person you're dealing with, and then the group deals with that person who they choose to elect as being the representative.
Because you'd be providing us the project, not individual.
Okay, just want to be clear that you're working with one entity. Okay.
Real quick endorsement on that rolling sign-up deadline. I'm an urban forester. I work with Minnesota Relief Grants, and they would release that money in June and July, which is the middle of the season. So it was really unfortunate timing. So
yeah.
Good idea there.
Thank you. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
The move.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, when you walked by, it looked like this was like the
looks like
end of the football season support group.
I can't understand. He still does not see why you're so upset. He said, you know, the thing that I really, really need is I need a vehicle. Because this is taking time. I've got to have a place that buys us some time. And he's right.
It's all
structural within the.
It's all the end recipients, the conservation.
What I said to him
was, conservation corps,
you really need to make a man of sense. Conservation Corps. And
is a,
here's
is
what
a,
I suggest.
A contract.
I suggest if you really, I mean, if you really, if that's really the big deal, you want a vehicle, why don't you pull that bill?
I'm not going to dictate.
And then let us talk about any kind of issue that relates to what we're doing. This can be the time. Throw that in as a bill. That's not your vehicle. And he said, well, I don't want to do it.
And so even if he left that bill and took that portion out, he would have put that bill and put clean water and parts, then there was no problem.
Well, that was my second suggestion was exactly that. I said, okay, if you let go that bill,
You can delete.
But
our place
is unbelievable.
And then where do we go from
up
there?
Motel.
Oh, and then have a separate bill that is our vehicle that we agree to, and that acknowledges if you do that, that acknowledges to us that you're not really trying to run around us and slap us in the face and so forth. So I don't know what. I assume we're going to be discussing that.
Direct flight 4 hours.
I don't know.
I think we are, and I'm speaking out of turn here, but I think Mike wants to condense it. He doesn't want it to become a, you know, take up half the meeting. He just wants to address it and get it on the record. And then
I think insofar as we really don't want...